This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. In recent weeks, there's been a national crackdown on some Latino gangs. In particular, U.S. immigration officials have busted almost 600 people who, they say, are involved in gang activity while being in the country illegally. North Carolina accounted for more of those busts recently than any other state. 77 alleged Latino gang members were detained here. And that has sparked a number of questions, namely, just how much of a problem are Latino gangs in North Carolina? Are gangs to be expected among any newly arrived immigrant group? Are they especially attractive to those who are in the country illegally? Are there ways to make Latino gangs less alluring to teenaged boys? And is deportation for being in the country illegally the way to crack down on gangs? We'll take a look at that this hour. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. That's 1-877-962-9862 if you care to weigh in. With us to sort through the Latino gang question is Richard Hayes. He's a senior research analyst for the Governor's Crime Commission, and he joins us by phone. Hi there, Richard Hayes.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Fine. And Alan Muriera is the executive director of Kid Gloves. That's a nonprofit organization that works with gang-involved youth. Welcome, Alan.
Welcome.
And as I say, the number's 1-877-962-9862. Now, Richard Hayes, you have been doing studies on gangs in North Carolina since 1999. The most recently released study was last year. What are some of the changes that occurred in those 5 years in North Carolina?
Well, I don't know the changes per se, but the noted changes are with how many gangs we're noticing. The Hispanic Latino gangs, for example, rose from 6.5% of all gangs, or 300 out of our 332 found in 1999, to 22.5% of the recognized 387 gangs in our 2004 study. Mm-hmm. So that is probably one of the most dominant changes we saw, along with changes to more rural areas as opposed to only being in the urban areas.
Were the Latino gangs equally dispersed in the urban and the rural areas, or do they show up in one area more than another?
Well, the most dominant areas for the Hispanic gangs have been, I think it was Wake County, Rowan County, which is close to Charlotte, and over in the Triad area. So the Triangle, Triad, and Charlotte areas have shown the most increases.
Yeah. Any explanation for why there has been this increase from, accounting for 6.5% of all gangs in 1999 and now 22.5% of the gangs last year?
Well, one explanation could be recognition. Law enforcement may not have been recognizing gang activity in the 1990s as well as they recognize it today. Many of our smaller law enforcement agencies have now availed themselves of training and methodologies to understand, to track, to gather intelligence on these groups. So they may not have been providing, I guess, a more educated view 5 years ago than they are today. They've become very educated on what they're looking at. So it might be a recognition issue.
Hmm. And one other question. I think this is important for defining what we're talking about when we talk about gangs here. What kind of activity are these gangs taking part in? What are they doing?
Some of their illegal activities are, the most dominant one is drug crimes. And that would go from the end of usage all the way to the end of transportation and selling. They're involved in vandalism, weapons crimes, larceny, breaking and entering, assaults, auto thefts, and even murders.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Now, we are talking about gangs in North Carolina, in particular the rise of Hispanic or Latino gangs in the past half a decade. Richard Hayes is with us. He is with the Governor's Crime Commission. Alan Muriera is here, too. He's executive director for the nonprofit organization Kid Gloves. Your organization, Alan, works with kids who are in gangs or who could likely be in gangs?
We work with kids that are identified in gangs and who want a way out. We use boxing as an alternative, activity. And also kids that are targeted by gangs. that are resisting and need an activity in order to not be hanging out in their community and really prone to the gangs.
How do you reach them?
We do a lot of outreach. Do a lot of on the street, pushing our program. I get a lot of my information about gangs and how they got here and the increase and who's in what area, but from the kids. And so we do a lot of outreach.
Well, what we're focusing today in particular on Latino and Hispanic gangs. Mm-hmm. What's your sense of why these teenagers, and there are women, you know, young women in gangs, but primarily young men, why would they be joining gangs? And do you think they're joining it at a higher rate than other parts of the U.S. population?
Now, from what I've seen, they are joining at a higher rate. And a lot of it is due to acculturation. A lot of the immigrant kids coming in here are finding it hard to assimilate in school. They're being made fun of because of their English-speaking skills. And so they're finding that joining a gang will provide them with protection and a means of, you know, being able to thrive in the school environment. Also, the increase for Hispanic gangs here, too, is that through migration, a lot of parents are pulling their kids out of states like California, Texas, which have high gang activity. And the kids are coming here and not renouncing their gang ties back there and starting their own little cliques. I'm seeing a lot now in middle schools with these kids starting their own cliques and recruiting kids. Mm-hmm. So,
and what's the appeal?
Oh, the appeal for me, being gang involved back at 15, was to be cool. But now with drugs and gangs being synonymous, the appeal is money, financial gains, protection, respect. And when you join a gang, you're familia or family. Mm-hmm. So if they're not getting that support at home, then they're finding it in other ways.
Right. 1-877-962-9862 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation. We're talking about the rise of Latino gangs in the country and in North Carolina. Just last week, there was news of a large bust that was going on across the country and involved both police and immigration officials. And Alan Maria, that was one approach that they were taking, was trying to crack down on gangs. Mm-hmm. And I imagine there would be different from, say, black gangs in the U.S. or white gangs or other immigrant group gangs. But among the Latino gangs, there's that threat of deportation if they're in the country illegally.
Exactly. And that's a good deterrent is deportation, because sometimes they'll target the family also if the child is gang involved to deport them. So that gets the parents involved in their child's life. The increased legislation as far as prison terms is not really much of a deterrent, because a lot of these guys will go into jail and learn a lot more about gang banging and come out with more knowledge. But I think it's a deterrent for especially among the gangs coming out of El Salvador, Honduras, you know, back in their country, just having a gang related tattoo is 8 to 10 years prison time.
But there have also been stories, have there not, about sometimes when the U.S. deports these gang members, they send the problem back to the country they may have come from, and now one is seeing a rise in gangs in these places where they didn't exist before. And that cycle can repeat itself. Those people can come back into the U.S.
Exactly. Just like in Mexico, a Southern California gang was established there and had gone into Mexico and establish ties in Mexico. So,
Okay, let's go to the phones. Judy joins us from Asheboro. Hi, Judy.
Yes, hello.
Hi there.
I would like to speak to you as a taxpayer. I'm very concerned and upset about the Latino gangs that apparently have come to be. Now I'm talking about illegal aliens, okay? Not folks who are legal, who are trying to do their best. But it is costing us a fortune as taxpayers to pay these people's medical bills, their legal fees, what have you. I definitely think that they should be deported if they are illegal, if they are involved in gangs. And the federal government is not doing its job, and neither are the states or the local governments.
Okay, well, I'm going to put that to our guests, and if you just hold on, please. Alan Moreira, is that an approach to take? You said that you thought the threat of deportation would be a deterrent. Can that really work, though? You know, among teenagers, do they even think that far ahead about?
No, teenagers, when they join gangs, don't think about the consequences of what their involvement can become. It's usually, you know, spur of the moment, you know, or fulfilling a need for protection. Deportation, that will just if they're at risk for that, the gangs will hide them out. You know, it's can be a deterrent if the members are caught, but you know, we really have to pursue it.
Right. Richard Hayes, this is an area where the federal government, with Homeland Security, is beginning to work more closely than it perhaps has in the past with local law enforcement.
Well, I see the study, the arrest that was made last week. That was an Immigration Service joint effort with local law enforcement. So obviously these folks must have been identified as being illegal either by the local law enforcement or the Immigration Service, and that what the caller had suggested must have been a portion of what they were going after.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll continue our conversation on Latino gangs in North Carolina with Richard Hayes from the Governor's Crime Commission and Alan Moreira, who is Executive Director of the nonprofit organization, anti-gang organization, Kid Gloves. And we'd get to more of your calls. Our number's 1-877-962-9862. Support for the State of Things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. This is the State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. In light of the 77 arrests in North Carolina last week of alleged Latino gang members, we are talking today about Latino gangs in North Carolina, how they have formed, and what is being done to discourage them from getting stronger. With us are Richard Hayes. He is with the Governor's Crime Commission. And Alan Moreira is Executive Director of the nonprofit organization Kid Gloves. He is here in the studio. Kid Gloves aims to get kids away from gangs. We welcome your calls to our number. Is 1-877-962-9862. What is it about gang life that appears to be attractive to yet another group of teenagers in North Carolina, and what can be done to try to counter that? Joining us now as well is Federico Van Gelderen. He is publisher of Que Pasa, that's a Spanish language newspaper here in North Carolina, and he is the director of a Spanish language radio station, actually seven of them here in the state. And Federico Van Gelderen, welcome back to the State of Things.
Thank you very much, Melinda.
Well, why do you think we have heard about this increase, at least in the numbers of Latino gangs in the state being reported? Why do you think we are seeing more young Latinos and Hispanics joining gangs in North Carolina?
Well, I think that we need to put this in context. We saw the Hispanic population grew like 500-600% in our state. So we were the number one state in the whole nation in Hispanic growth. So basically, when you see the numbers that Richard was telling, probably you need to put them in perspective. You know, basically what we are seeing here is an increase in everything that has to do with a population that really now counts from almost 10% of the population that we have in our state. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing that I want to point out. The other thing is these people really came in the first wave of what I call a migrant worker mentality. We brought them with a migrant worker mentality, and used to be the kind of people that we have in our state coming and working our farms. But for the first time during the 90s, we saw this coming to the metropolitan areas.
And that is different. Staying, not just going, seasonal. Yes.
But two things, I think, were broken in that period. One was the time frame. A migrant worker used to say, Federico, I'm going to be in North Carolina 9 months and go back home, because that's usually what, you know, the farms require for their jobs. When they came to the metropolitan area, they were saying, Federico, I'm going to stay 3 years and go back home. These same people now are either having a family in North Carolina and staying here because the kind of labor they came to fill in our economy, it looks like it's more permanent. And the other thing that is happening is the family reunification process. And I think that family reunification process is, you know, is bringing kids from ages 4 to 15, 16. And I think there is where we have the increase in gang activity and the problems.
Question for you, though. If indeed the jobs that the immigrants are coming to the U.S. for, and large numbers of them illegally coming to the U.S. for, if those jobs are more permanent, wouldn't that be make the case that their lives would have a little more stability than going from field to field as in the old days? And with that stability, shouldn't that make it easier for the kids as opposed to being taken from one farm field to another as in the old days?
Well, I think that basically what I was talking about, the migrant worker mentality, is something that we need to recognize on a federal level. We have in between 12 to 20 million that we feel that is the undocumented population in our country. That basically is telling us that we have a social reality that exceeds our legal frame. And I think that two things really changed. One was before September 11 and after September 11. Before September 11, this underground economy was good business, you know, and anybody wants to talk about that. You know, there was a lot of labor being done by these workers, and there was a lot of commitment from them to send money to their families back home. So it's not that the problem really starts here. It was, you know, those economies pulling these people out, and we were pulling these people in to fill those jobs. The other thing that really happened here was after September 11. And I think that probably the sense that we have after September 11 is that we still don't know how to work with the fear. We don't know how to work with this case that is not just an economic issue now, it's a security issue. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to keep those two things in perspective. Okay. And I agree with you, we need to change our immigration law. Without that legal umbrella, there's not a lot of things that we are going to be able to do, because mm-hmm. the undercount population is almost 50%. Mm-hmm. So every time we budget things, every time we put in programs where we are really not understanding the total scope of the problem that we have.
But would making that population legal, whether through amnesty or what, or mm-hmm. through a different policy, would that instantly do away with gangs? I mean, I think of other immigrant groups. I'm a member of one of them that came to this country and very famously had gangs. It's called the Mafia. Mm-hmm. And, no. and would have immigrated here legally. So does the illegal status really weigh in as heavily as...
No, but I think that North Carolina really, we are a new Latino destination, and I think that we have the chance to choose to make things different. Giving a legal status to our immigration and recognizing the need of temporary law, of temporary jobs that we need to fill out under the law, first of all, we'll finish with the contradictions that I see as an immigrant also. You know, I think that we pray what we don't practice. When you see that we have such an immigration mess here and we are trying those countries to get into that things. But on the other hand, we allow kids to have a path. One of the problems that we have, they don't have a path, because if they are illegal here and they are in our school system, when they finish that, there's no choice for them. So we need a call to action to make sure that there's a path for them.
The problem being, if you don't have a social security number, you can't enroll in college.
Well, they can enroll in college. And on the other, on the other hand, I think that we need to understand what drives these people to come to our country. And it's an economic decision. And these kids, if you don't put a whole path where they can understand that there's a job for them in our community, in any of the companies that now tries to serve this new population, and that is an asset to be bilingual and bicultural, and there's a path for them through our community college system either or our university, where they will make the decision, as Alan says.
So they can go now? Mm-hmm. I mean, regardless of Social Security? Or they cannot?
They cannot, and if they can, they need to pay out-of-state tuition, so basically it's almost impossible for them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let us go to Amy in Siler City. Hi there, Amy.
Hey.
Hi. Did you have a question? Go ahead.
I was calling. I live with a guy that's from Guatemala, and we have four children together, and I've seen a decrease in the Hispanics believing in the local governments and stuff, because they do believe that if they do go to the, you know, like local governments, such as the police, they do feel like they're going to get deported.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you think that might be a repercussion of that there'd be even fewer going to the police about other issues because of these deportations that have been happening?
Yes.
Yeah.
For an instance, I had a friend who, she lives with a Hispanic guy, and they got into a fight over just because she didn't want him to drive their car, you know, drinking and driving. and his elbow popped in her face, and he automatically went to jail just because his elbow hit her face. They wouldn't listen to anything.
Mm-hmm. Right. What do you think should be done about the gang problem? Do you think deportation is one way to do that, or?
No, not necessarily, because there's whites that are in gangs. You know, we give them second chances. So I just think that there should be more activities out there for the Latino population, mm-hmm. and not people be so closed-minded
Well, Amy, thank you for your call. Alan Moriera, tell us about what your group does. Kid Gloves takes the boxing approach,
exactly.
boxing alternative.
Exactly. I agree with Amy. There needs to be more programs out there targeting the Hispanic youth and all youth in general. We're lacking, and that's one of the reasons for the increase, is also lack of prevention and intervention programs targeting gang involvement. But my program uses boxing as the draw, and kids think with their feet, and you know, if you don't engage them right away and something they're interested in, then they won't stay for your program. So I use boxing as a draw, which is looked on like soccer among the Hispanic youth as something they like to do. Mm-hmm. And through that, we provide mentoring. We get to know them, ask them why they're gang involved, and if they have any other interests. We find resources to direct them in that way. We also help them with schoolwork, and we get them involved in community activities, community involvement. Mm-hmm. A lot of times now, the youth growing up have a lack of empathy for other people. So, you know, when you see these gangs, these kids, especially part of the initiation is to go out on a mission, you know, just pull the trigger with total disregard for human life.
To kill somebody.
Yes, uh-huh. Hmm. That's a very, shows a lack of empathy, you know, for.
Tell us, you were in a gang when you were a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was.
And how many years ago was that, if I might ask?
Oh, you're going to make me do the math now.
Yeah.
That was 15, about 35 years ago.
Wow. So why did you join a gang?
And there's many ways to get involved in a gang. My family was involved, so that one way is when you get recruited, but another way is to get blessed in, and that's when your family is involved. And I'm seeing that with Hispanic families coming in, that their families are gang involved also. So it's harder for the youth to get out when that's the case. But that was blessed in being a family involved.
So let me follow up. And why did you get out of the gangs?
Got out because, you know, growing up, I knew right from wrong. I didn't grow up in a lower socioeconomic status. My mother was a doctor and my father was in the military. But being exposed to a lot of this, back in the days when I was running with the gangs, there were guns were hard to get. So bats and knives and chains were, you know, the tools of the trade. A friend of mine went missing for a couple of days, and we found him in a car, beat and killed by a rival gang, and it occurred to me that, hey, that could happen to me. So I chose to get out, join the military, and get out.
Right. And one follow-up before I go back to the phones is, when you talked about the families being involved and, mm-hmm. and then the kids just follow suit, is it that the families were involved in gangs in the country they came from? Or is it something that is happening once they get mm-hmm. to the States?
You know, the caller said that a lot of the illegal Hispanics were in gangs. I like to point out that not all gang members are illegal.
Are here in the country illegal.
Exactly.
Right.
Some were born here, third generation. And so when you have third generation, the members, the family members are the ones that have been indoctrinated into the gangs, and that was here coming into the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and Richard Hayes with the Governor's Crime Commission.
Follow up on what he
said? Sure, please do.
Okay, some of the academic data through the 70s, 80s, and 90s was indicating, much like the previous speaker said, that gangs were second, third, fourth generation from families that had moved to America and been here for multiple years. Today we're seeing a lot of gang membership coming as first generation. I think we're conducting a study currently that shows law enforcement seeing about 73% of gang membership being first generation membership in this state. So I think there is a concern about the migration of gang-involved youth. And that may be a migration of families moving from one state to another, so that these are first generation in North Carolina as opposed to maybe first generation in the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll go to the phones, and Jeffrey is with us from Rocky Mount. Hi there, Jeffrey.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm a retired military member. I spent a decade in Latin America, and my question is, do you feel that there's a centralized nexus of larger gangs such as the MS-13 and others that are using predatory tactics to encourage or force the youth to join these memberships for the purpose of drug trade and other things, possibly using their own intelligent backgrounds against them, in so much as saying, hey, your parents came in illegally, worked for us, or we're going to turn the dime on you, and things of that nature.
Oh, great question. Yeah. And I'll go to Federico first, and then
I think that you are right with that. And I agree also with what Richard was saying about first generation. I think that we saw in our state people coming straight from Latin America. Now we see more people coming from other states. And I think that runs, you know, gangs runs like a franchise. Unfortunately, we now have the area franchisees trying to get these kids involved into gangs. And the problem that I see, and that's probably what the caller is saying, North Carolina, we went through being a state where drugs will go from Miami to New York. We were a transition state, and now we have a market. The same amounts of the population that grew here grew the Hispanic buying power. So there's a market now for drug dealing, there's a market for prostitution, and I think that that's why this area franchisee who are coming from New York, from Chicago, from different places now, find that this is a very good market. We are still a little naive in the way we think that we need to work with these issues in our state. And on the other hand, it's very easy to recruit these kids because they really lost their sense of belonging. When they come to our state, the problem that, you know, their parents will put them in the school, they are very busy working, and I think that two really things change with them. One is their economy. When they have six kids in Mexico and they can wire money, make dollars and spend pesos in Mexico, it's easy to have that family and think that really things are improving for them. When they go through the family reunification process, I think two things happen. One, their economy is going to be dollar-to-dollar economy, and that is the first problem. And that kid that is 14, 13, is ready to go and work. So they will drop out from school, and they will try to find the easiest way to get in what Alan also was saying, and it's the assimilation process. And I think that is a big problem. Assimilation versus integration. These kids want to look like Americans, be like Americans, because they really don't know where they are. Their parents are so busy trying to make money. So gangs is a very good way for them to get that sense of family belonging that Alan was talking.
Mm-hmm. Alan. Yeah.
And let me just that you. It's a good thing you bring up the military aspect. A lot of these gangs, such as the MS, are military trained. When we left them in the during the Contra War, the drug lords went ahead and hired them. They're using that, and gangs will use anything as recruitment tools to recruit kids. And if it's holding your immigrant status over your head, that's what they'll do.
Are gangs, the gangs that we're seeing in Central America now, one reads accounts of it and sounds, it's almost like it's this American, U.S. export, the concept of, and there have been gangs around the world, but the gangs one is seeing now in Central America seem to be an export from the States. Is that a fair estimation?
Knowing what I know about MS is that it started in Southern California, and it was for the El Salvadorians to protect themselves against the Mexicans and natural-born Hispanics. And it has somewhat gotten back to their country, where now it's just blown up. And I know it's MS has started here in California, in the States.
Federico?
I agree more with you. I think that this is part of the globalization that we still don't understand. We bring kids from Latin America. Mm-hmm. They came here. They get to get involved in gangs. And when we deported them, now they are running the same gangs in their own countries.
Exactly.
And I think that is part of the process that we need to understand.
And part, and because the borders are so porous, I mean,
well,
they could be coming back for a second round.
That
in
for
the
sure.
States.
But on the other hand, I think that when I was talking about we need to pray and practice what we pray, is that this is a social decomposition process that we are living. And when we are breaking families in the way we are breaking now, well, if the family is still the base of the strong society, well, we are breaking families here. There's no parents that can watch to the kids when we have these.
But it sounded like their standard of living might have been better in the countries where when the parents are sending money to them. And
but depend where they
and they come to the
to.
States, and then, as you said, it's they're working dollar for dollar here.
Well, but well, that's in the economic side. But on the other side is these kids don't compare themselves with what they left in Mexico, Guatemala, or El Salvador, and they want to have the same cars that the American kids mm-hmm. have, the best sound equipment, so they get involved in this, you know, economy that really gears people to buy things that you never know when you want to use them. But.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you all for joining us today to take a look, at least for a short time, on Latino gangs in North Carolina. Thank you. Federico Van Gelderen is publisher of Que Pasa Communications, which includes a newspaper and 7 radio stations in the Spanish-speaking market. Also, Alan Moreira, executive director of the nonprofit organization Kid Gloves, and Richard Hayes, senior analyst with the Governor's Crime Commission. Thank you all. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And just ahead, a conversation with Statesville native and author Blake Crouch about writing horror, scaring his 8th grade teacher, and taking some geographic license. That's just ahead on The State of Things.